Welcome to Parents Perspective. Big bird, big bird, squealed 4-year-old Ellie. Her dad came into the room. It's my favorite, she cooed happily, settling down in her favorite little chair. Okay, okay, her dad smiled. I was thinking we could go to the park. It's such a nice day outside. Shh, shh, Ellie turned to her dad. Let's go after. Then she turned back to her show. Oscar's singing the trash song, she announced, joining in the singing. Okay, her dad responded. I've got things to do in the garage. Why don't you come get me when your show is over? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about today's children's television? I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is in a unique position to help us learn about and evaluate children's television programming. Gary Nell is President and Chief Executive Officer of Sesame Workshop. He leads the nonprofit educational organization in its mission to create innovative, engaging content and media to help children toward their fullest potential. He's been instrumental in focusing on Sesame Street's global mission and helped found PBS Kids Sprout, a 24-hour U.S. cable channel. He's also the father of four, ranging from 15 to 23. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Gary.
Great to be here with you, Linda.
What would you say is the biggest misconception you've encountered about children's television?
Well, I think, you know, and now this expands out to all media, but I think that the misconception is that television cannot be an effective teacher. And I think that we've learned, certainly over the 40-year history of Sesame Street, that it is a profoundly impactful teacher, whether we like that or not as parents, and that those of us who care about education need to figure out ways to harness the use of television and now other media into proactive, pro-child, pro-educational content that's going to impact these kids and get them on their way to a successful adulthood.
I have a 39-year-old son who was addicted to Sesame Street in its very early days and in his very early days. And we didn't have any sense at that time of how old children should be when they should start watching television or be allowed to. But he learned enormously. He learned to read.
Well, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics has always sort of had a 2-year-old guideline, which isn't, you know, in our minds carved in stone. We know there's a lot of kids that are 18 months old that are watching Sesame Street, even though the show's not really designed for them. The show is really designed for 2 to 5-year-olds. And it was originally designed as a way of getting those kids who were not in formal childcare programs where they could be pushed into the basic whole child curriculum to get them ready for school. It was a way to plug some of that gap with content that could be literally, at the time, beamed into your house via television for an hour plus a day. That world, of course, has totally changed today. And we have flipped where 1/4 of the kids were not in some child care today. It's 1/4 of the kids, are home. Now we got 3/4 of them in some sort of child care program. So it's completely flipped in the last 4 decades. So the ways in which we are reaching our target audience, the ways in which kids are interacting and intersecting with media have totally shifted since your son happily got educated from Sesame Street.
And now his children are in that position.
Right.
What is the biggest surprise to you?
The biggest surprise is just how impactful media can be. I was really unaware at how powerful an influencer these Muppets could be, right? That Elmo and Rosita and Big Bird and Abby Cadabby today are just incredibly powerful. I can't tell you how many moms, Linda, or dads have come up to me and say, my child's first word was Elmo. Mm-hmm. And I'm going like, it wasn't mommy or daddy. But somehow these characters are magnetically able to connect with young kids. It's quite astounding.
I think it's also interesting in today's world, parents can summon up any time of the day or night, either parts of a whole show or, what is it, Elmo's World. There are certain things where my little grandson, who just turned 3, would say Elmo, when he wanted, that was a special treat. And his mother could just turn on her computer and there it was.
Yeah, well, that's, again, something that's completely changed. Now we live in a so-called on-demand world, mm-hmm, where content is available 24/7. Kids have no concept that their show is not on now. What do you mean it's not on now? They just don't have it. If find it. Either find it in a DVD if you're really a dinosaur, or find it online, or find it through cable on demand. You know, we have this channel, as you mentioned, called Sprout, and it's getting 22 million video downloads a month. Basically from moms or dads, but coming home from work after a long day, cooking dinner, and like, let's call up Sesame Street for my child and have her watch it while I can get something done here at 6:17 p.m., as opposed to having some scheduler deciding at some station where it's going to be aired and you have to be home for that or you miss it for the day. That's completely changed now. It's really a much more of an on-demand world, and that's not just unique to Sesame. That's all media are in the same boat.
If you could directly talk to the parents of preschoolers today, which in some senses you are today on this program, what would you want them to be aware of about children's television?
I think you have to really redefine, broaden the scope to children's media. It's way beyond television now. In fact, Linda, this was the first year that more people numerically connected with Sesame Street content not from broadcast television. In other words, from on demand, from online, from YouTube and Hulu and all of these other sources, than watching the show on PBS. It's kind of amazing. More people now. So it is completely shifted. And I love to tell the story about my grandmother. My grandmother was like infatuated with the refrigerator. She thought it was the most amazing invention ever, the icebox, you know, like this. And I never thought about the refrigerator. It was an appliance for me that I grew up with, you know, who thought about the refrigerator. We look at all these things today like iPods and Blackberries and mobile smartphones and iPads and all this stuff, these incredible inventions that we got to run out and, oh, my God, look what this does and that does. Kids do not look at those that way. They are appliances, and they will never know the world before cell phones, never know the world before iPods, never know the world before high-speed internet. So it's very hard for adults to get inside that head, but you have to do that to understand how children are going to learn in the future. How is school going to need to evolve in a technologically ubiquitous world where we now have kids growing up so-called digitally? This is the big change, I think, that as a modern parent, if I was going to, you know, speak to them directly, these are the things you have to get to know as a parent, and it's part of being a parent today. I'm not going to put a qualitative judgment like, oh, this is a great thing, because there's downsides to it as well. But it is a fact. And if you are a parent, you've got to get yourself out ahead of this stuff as much as you can and know what these things are about social media, know what these things are about texting, understanding both the positive potentials of learning and the negative potentials of bad things like bullying and other things that can happen, as we've learned the hard way recently.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion with CEO of Sesame Workshop, Gary Nell, on children's television programming.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Gary Nell, CEO of Sesame Workshop, about children's television programming. We all know that we have to have rules for our kids, and kids are more secure if they have rules. But I don't know enough about all this media to know what rules to make.
Yeah. Well, there are a few sources which are around, and I don't want to be just a huckster here for certain things, but there are some nonprofit organizations that are doing some important work, including the FCC, which is part of the government, but Common Sense Media is one in which they, full disclosure, I sit on their board of directors. They're doing terrific work, I think, in trying to give parents and kids filters and ways of becoming more literate with all of these technologies and understanding the upsides and the downsides. In fact, going into schools to actually teach kids in the schools what all these things mean and understanding that when you post something on a social media platform like Facebook, you better be aware that that thing could come back to bite you big time later on by an employer, by a college you're applying to, by the school principal. So you have to understand the consequences of your new digital actions.
Sandy and I, as grandmothers, have had to learn some of this. We've also done some programming on social media. As a grandparent, it's a little scary to know that my grandchildren are facing a world that's totally foreign to me in that sense.
Although you're not doing so bad with technology.
We're working hard. We're working real hard. Would you talk with us a little bit about the mission and focus of Sesame Workshop?
Sure. We're 40 years old, believe it or not.
Yay.
Well, your son, I guess, is living proof. But the show has won more Emmys than any show in TV history. It's now in 140 countries around the world. Its mission is simple, to use media to help children reach their highest potential. It's driven off a derivative that our founder, Joan Ganz Cooney, really promoted, which is the idea that television was teaching kids. It was teaching them sugared cereal ads and Chef Boyardee, I Can Sing for You the Beefaroni theme song from the 1960s, which I will not do for you today. But it's showing you that TV was teaching. It's not a question of whether it was teaching. It was what was it teaching. So why not teach them letters and numbers and health outcomes and social and emotional learning, the basic tenets of pre-K education, and being able to take those out into now a 21st century context is what I am trying to do with my 350 colleagues based up in New York, but really around the world, trying to do some important things with media to maximize the potential of its positive use.
Are the shows in the different countries produced in those countries?
They are. And we're not doing local productions in all of those I mentioned, but in about 25, we have actually local adaptations of Sesame Street that are very Egyptian or very South African or very Israeli or very Chinese. And so we're producing in Shanghai and Tel Aviv and Cairo and Johannesburg. These are local versions of the show, built with a local curriculum. So in Egypt, we're promoting girls' education as a big program, which Mrs. Mubarak, the first lady there, has embraced as really a big push for her and for the country. In South Africa, we have an HIV-positive Muppet to deal with the 1 in 9 kids who are HIV-positive, who are being stigmatized. And we can promote destigmatization by proving to a child through this character, Cammy, that's her name, she's a Muppet who's HIV positive, who's an AIDS orphan, that you can play with someone or hug them or be friends with them and not necessarily get sick. So she's become a UNICEF champion for children, very much in a South African context. So that's where I think what we try to export is the magic of television, the magic of engaging education and training people how to produce great children's television. And now it seems to have worked because we're pretty much in every continent around the world. We haven't launched in Antarctica yet, but we're waiting for the penguins to call.
I understand that Sesame Street is also interested in childhood obesity.
This is probably, Linda, one of the great crises in health for kids in America today. The chances that a child may not live as long as their parents, the epidemic of diabetes today is profound, especially among certain ethnic minorities. We took this issue on, and because we felt we had powerful characters to teach lessons for preschoolers as a prevention strategy as opposed to an intervention strategy when it may be too late, actually. So we used, for instance, Cookie Monster to learn that cookies are a sometimes food, not an all-the-time food. And I was accused on Saturday Night Live of making him the Pilates monster, which he is not. He's not the veggie monster. He's not the Pilates monster. But we know that there is a mom in Maryland somewhere who is able to tell her young child that even Cookie Monster can't eat cookies all the time. And it's a tool for parents to try to promote healthy eating. Three simple messages. That's all it is. Eat your colors, so that you're not only eating so-called white food like potatoes and macaroni and stuff like white bread. There's sometimes food and all the times food. It's ridiculous to tell a child she can never have cookies or cake, but those are not for all the time. They're for sometimes. And then the third really is getting up and exercising. And even though a lot of preschoolers probably don't need to be pushed to get up because they usually need to be pushed to sit down, but in this case, we want to encourage more outdoor activity. We want to encourage more exercise and moving around and a healthier diet that we think can help give kids a head start on building a healthy and successful lifestyle. So that's where we're trying to focus with this program called Healthy Habits for Life at the workshop. And we're working in all kinds of media and museum exhibits and everything else to really promote this way about moving a kid's health outcome.
Gary, as I understand it, this morning you had a very interesting visit with the Pentagon. And I think it would be interesting for us to find out what the particular interest is of Sesame Street with the military.
Well, 4 years ago, Linda, I literally was riding a train into work, and there was a front page article in the paper about a family who is being dispossessed from their home while the husband was being shipped off to Iraq. And I was angry about this at a time when we were seeing a lot of bumper stickers about supporting the troops. But how could we as a country let something like this happen? And I came into work and pushed our staff to sort of take a look at what the needs are of these families, because we really didn't know anything. And we discovered there's 800,000 preschool kids of active duty military or guard and reserves currently whose parents are being deployed, redeployed a third and fourth time. And trying to deal with those comings and goings and understanding those absences had put a tremendous strain on these families. So we did a kit called Talk, Listen, Connect. We did a primetime TV special with Cuba Gooding Jr. And it was really about how to allow your children the space to open up and talk about their feelings and connect with them when you're overseas. The whole idea is when a soldier is deployed, the entire family is deployed, and bringing some sunshine on this kind of undiscussed or non-discussed topic. It was so successful that we decided to get into another phase on changes. In other words, what happens when a member of the military comes back injured, either physically or so-called invisibly, and 30% of our service members are coming back injured. It's a huge number. Some people might view it as an epidemic proportions, and a lot of the wounds are from these explosive devices, which create different kinds of havoc, you know, loss of limb, traumatic brain injury, these kinds of things. So how do you deal with this, you know, when talking to a child when dad comes back different and has to be in a wheelchair or doesn't have a leg or comes back and looks the same, but he's not the same? So we did a special with Queen Latifah and John Mayer, the singer, who volunteered their time to a wonderful program. And then we did an outreach kit around getting back to a new normal. And that was so successful that we decided to get into probably the toughest topic of all, which is what happens when dad doesn't come back at all. And then obviously this topic affects all of us as civilians as well. I mean, how do you talk to a child when grandma dies and she's not coming back? And how do you explain this to a young child? And we found that there's just few resources available, especially for military families who are dealing with this, but also even as for us as civilians, there just are not a lot of resources that are available to the general public to make these kinds of things a little easier to cope with. So we created a kit called When Families Grieve. We have a primetime special, which we produced, that Katie Couric hosted, who went through this herself as she lost her husband, Jay Monahan, when her preschool kids were very young. And so she interviews four brave families who are from the military, a soldier killed in combat, one who dies from suicide after he returned from Iraq, a fireman lost in the line of duty, and a breast cancer victim, and dealing with their surviving spouses and what they went through to talk about what the important touch points are with children. That's what this program's been about, and we kicked it off at the Pentagon today with Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen, and the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Bill Lynn, and all of the Joint Chiefs were there. It was quite an amazing turnout for this obviously really critical program to fill a really important void.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on children's media programming.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 800-250-2015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Gary Nell of Sesame Workshop about children's television programming. I guess military families probably experience a higher proportion of grief than the wider community.
Yeah, that's probably true. What I've learned over the years we've been working with the military, Linda, is there's probably a little more of a built-in resilience, if you know what I mean, in dealing with life's traumas just because from the nature of the existence and what you're signing up for. But you got to remember that these 800,000 kids didn't sign up for anything. They're there. And it's mom or dad, right?
Or both.
And they're thrown into these situations where they're going to have to become resilient whether they like it or not. And we're just here trying to be with Elmo and Rosita and some of the Muppets and people like Katie Couric to help parents cope with this really tough situation a little bit easier.
Do you find that children identify with the Muppets or see them as not real people?
They completely identify with them. And I'll give the test. If you ever come to the set and you look at Ernie and Bert, you will not think of them as puppets. These are somehow living, and even a grown-up like me goes on the set and just, you know.
You get lost.
Yeah. I mean, I did a press event with Elmo today. It wasn't like a puppet. It was Elmo, right? Elmo is real. Tell your listeners.
We believe you. What do you think today's kids need that children's public television can provide for them?
Well, I think, we live now in a world that is, as I mentioned, much broader than television and much broader than public television. Again, whether that's good or not is a different question. But I think where there's a big gap right now, and one of the things we're trying to stare at is beyond preschoolers. So the 6 to 9-year-old world is pretty vacant of strong, engaging educational programming. And so we've created two things recently. One is the Electric Company, which was a big hit when your son was around.
Another addiction for him.
Okay. We brought it back in a new version that's on every day on PBS. And it's really trying to promote literacy solutions for second and third graders to avoid the fourth grade reading slump, which has, unfortunately, a huge prediction towards success in high school and then finally getting a good job. And if you're not reading at a proficient level in the fourth grade, the chances of you doing well in school or even staying in school go precipitously down. So we're trying to intervene at that critical age of 7 and 8 to do that. And we've also set up a center named after our founder, Joan Ganz Cooney, which is focusing on using new media like games and PlayStations and Nintendo Wii's and DS's to try to promote literacy solutions. There's no reason why these things only have to be misogynist or violent video games. They can be promoting educational platforms. It's a question of getting creative people coming up with engaging content and inspiring them to do it, just as Sesame Street back in its day challenged the conventional wisdom that television couldn't teach. And now these games teach. How do we take these games and try to model positive behaviors around literacy, math, science, and other things that can really fill out a child's education, get him or her prepared for 21st century America?
It sounds desirable to me because it's not passive.
Right. It's much more interactive, and that's the one thing about the web also done the right way is that it's interactive. And we're finding even on our own website, which we invested a lot of time and resources into, that people stay on the website about 28 minutes on average, which is terrific because they're really sticking around and engaging with the content, not simply watching it in a literal or lateral format.
Are there any caveats about television that you would recommend?
Well, we've never been an advocate of turn on the tube as a babysitter. In fact, we would say the opposite. I am a personal big believer in turning the television off, getting outside. We have kids who don't know enough about the natural world as they should. I'm a big believer in Rich Liu's book and his whole movement about trying to get kids comfortable with the outdoors. So we've never been one that's just all TV and all electronics all the time. But with that said, we know that kids are going to go there. And even if you're one of those families who I respect who don't have a TV in their house, they're going to see the show down at Jimmy's house, okay? Or they're going to watch SpongeBob, whether you like it or not, trust me. And so the question for those of us who care about education is, can we come up with something that's going to appeal to them so that, frankly, parents and kids can choose to engage with content in a more strategic way and not have it as much of a passive time waster as it's been traditionally?
I remember asking a pediatrician when my children were very young, what do you do with your children on Saturday morning? And he said, they watch cartoons.
I rest my case with the Chef Boyardee commercials.
There you go. Gary, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been talking about?
Well, we'd love the listeners to check us out, first of all, at sesamestreet.org. You can create your own Sesame Street. We've got hundreds of games to teach your preschoolers. You can learn about our international work. You can get free downloads of all of these military families content kits that I talked about earlier. And then I think for media literacy components, the commonsensemedia.org is a really great website which rates movies, TV, video games, books, et cetera, but also more importantly has a lot of great downloads about how to talk to your kids about different social media going forward. And that's what we probably need more than anything as kids get older with these appliances.
Our very special appreciation to Gary Nell, CEO of Sesame Workshop, for joining us today to share his experience and expertise. Thank you.
Linda, great to be here and keep up the great work.
Thank you. Our gift for our first caller is a one-of-a-kind 40th anniversary Sesame Street DVD collection. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 435. Please spell anything that's not obvious and tell us what station you're listening to. Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.